I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Strings Direct are one of the most comprehensive guitar string retailers worldwide, so they definitely know a thing or two about guitar and bass strings. And with that comes the complete understanding of the frustration you get when trying to find a set of strings with the exact gauges you want. Maybe you're looking to tune in Robert Fripp's famous new standard all-fifths tuning, or perhaps you've got a Yamaha G10 synth guitar, which requires 6 16-gauge strings. Who knows? Whatever your tuning, whatever your gauge, whatever your preferred brand, Strings Direct have you covered with their Strings Direct Custom Gauge Builder. Build your own set of signature strings from scratch with options for electric, bass and acoustic, and with banjo and classical guitars coming soon. And choose from a huge range of the world's most popular string manufacturers. Strings Direct have got us guitar nerds covered. Check them out and build your own set at stringsdirect.co.uk. And on top of that, all Guitar Nerds listeners can take advantage of a 10% discount off of anything on the Strings Direct website throughout November and December. Just use the code NERDS10 at the checkout. And for more info, follow the link in the description of this podcast. This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Singular Sound, the music gear company from Miami, Florida, known for the Beat Buddy, the only drum machine that sounds human and is easy to use. It's the first drum machine in the form of a guitar pedal, so you can control the beat with your foot whilst you play. This year, they came out with a new 6-track stereo looper pedal with touch-enabled screen, hands-free mixing, and simultaneous parallel and sequential looping, called the Eros Loop Studio. They also came out with a Cably, a portable cable management system that organizes your cables so they'll never get tangled again! This Black Friday, visit SingularSound.com to order new gear. Almost all products will be 10% off, and any order automatically enters you into a chance to win a $200 Singular Sound gift card. On top of that, Guitar Nerds listeners get a $10 discount on everything on the Singular Sound website by using discount code GUITARNERD, or follow links in the description of this podcast. And welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branson, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Happy days are here again.
And Jay Cross.
Not so good, Al.
Yes, that's right.
Our two personalities perfectly summed up.
Yeah, I don't understand the references that you use at the start of
most episodes. Never. That's because we're much more clever and of sort of, you know, like, we're more highly educated than you.
Not So Good, Al, is from the end of the Buddy Holly video by the band Weezer. Have you heard of Weezer?
Not really, no.
Okay, Wheatus. You know Wheatus?
Are they the ones, they're the ones with the weird acoustic through a drive pedal.
So yeah. Where did this come up? Did it come up in our forum or in a different forum or in something completely different?
Probably because Fender have made an acoustic drive pedal, I'd imagine, why this has come to
light
again.
It wasn't, but you're right. That is, thank you for bringing that back to my attention. That's the Smolder acoustic overdrive. It's been very popular, actually.
The Smolder.
Yeah, it's been, anyway, that's fine.
Because you're burning wood.
Sorry?
Maybe that's what it is. Yeah. That wood is so hot from being shredded.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that is what it is. Anyway.
That's the thing. Why is acoustic music not called wood? Like, you know, metal is called metal. There should be other like, things that
so
define
metal,
genre.
Just anything
this
played
rock?
On a keyboard. Just
oh, yeah. We've got metal and
plastic.
Rock.
Yeah.
And metal. We should have wood.
Wood.
And what else could we have? Carbon fiber?
Yeah.
What's that?
I don't know. I guess
just
it would
like
be like
really bad, like level 42 or whatever.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking like late Genesis.
Yeah. Never think about late Genesis.
Yeah. I liked, you know, early Genesis. Selling England by the Pound, great record.
Never heard it. Oh, banned in my house. As we found out last week, my dad's opinion of prog is very low. Extremely low.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did we talk about this last week?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was on the Patreon. I used the swear word to do an impression of him.
Right. So there has been roughly 30 members of the band Wheatus since 1995.
What? Did they just all have to have makeup to look like the same guy?
No, that's...
No, he's the constant, obviously.
He's been in the band the entire time.
Right.
And he has always sung and he has always played guitar. There's never been any other guitar player in Wheatus. He's the only guitar player.
Yeah. There's no... Oh, yeah, because they've got a percussionist.
Bongo man. Bongo player.
I mean... Basically, all of our knowledge from the band Wheatus is from the video for Teenage Dirtbag,
right?
That's what you're going off.
They got a hot bong Easter. Like, it's a Peep Show quote.
Right, okay.
Don't know. Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah. But 30 people in that band. That's quite a lot, isn't it?
That's a big band to not make that much noise.
That's almost as many people as have been in your band.
How many is it? You talk about something else and I'll do some adding up.
Are you going to do some math?
Can you turn my headphones up a bit, please, Joe?
Yes, I can certainly do that, Jay.
Thank you.
Is this your new thing now, to sort of make subtle adjustments to the setup at the start of the podcast?
Just make it better. This is the sound check.
Right.
I'm still counting.
Yeah. I just, you know, it's fine. You're just eager to get going.
Mm.
And, you know.
I am.
As you know, I get great enjoyment out of...
Delaying that.
Frustrating you.
Am I supposed to count people who have only done one gig?
Yes.
But you can't count them. They have to be a fully fledged member.
Excuse me?
He is a member, but he was not in the band very long.
Right.
I think it's 10.
There's no way it's 10.
I think it's 10.
Well, I mean, 10 is a lot considering that your band is a three-piece, or was for most of the time.
Yeah. I think it's 10.
Okay.
Oof, wow.
Anyway. Yeah, Wheatus, 30 people in the band, quite a lot.
Yeah, impressive, very impressive. Well,
I'll close that tab. That's the end of that conversation.
Well, there's some weird stuff that's come out this week that we're going to be talking about in the news, which is going to include some acoustic stuff, which is quite rare for us to actually talk about.
Wheatus' signature.
I don't think that. What did he have? He had like a guitar with loads of stickers on it.
I'm sure we've talked about this before, but he had.
Open the tab again.
It's okay.
I'm on incognito.
Actually, I have no desire to continue the conversation.
I bet. What's it called? Equip board has probably got the list of Wheatus equipment. But he had like a whole rack of stuff. He had like a big rack processor that did it all. Mm, so yeah, made it sound.
Wheatus members gear.
Go on then.
Brendan M. Brown, having a quick look. No gear added.
That is a shame.
Sweet, man.
I wonder if
shame.
It's got no gear added for all 30 members of this band. Okay, no, they only have about 7 of the members, eight members, and no gear added for any of them.
Right. Oh well, that is a shame. That's the good thing about a quip board. You can add yourself. It kind of makes
have you,
you
done
feel...
that?
I bet you have. That is exactly the sort of thing.
I don't think
you would
I'm
do.
On there. I
that
don't think I'm on
exactly
there.
Exactly the sort of thing that you would
equip
do.
Board.
I'm not on there. I certainly haven't added myself. If I'm on there, it's not me.
Okay.
Sure. Oh, yeah. It wasn't me.
Okay. So here's polymath.
Mm. There isn't a polymath.
Here's polymath.
No, you're adding us now.
Here's Polyman, and Joe. Oh, they spelt your name wrong.
Has the geezer from Muse got a signature bass that we can add to Joe's?
Wonderful,
a quick board.
Brilliant. Anyway,
I might put him up there as Billy Branton.
Anyway, so I'm back from tour temporarily for a little bit. So I had the second leg of tour that I've just returned from, which included the.
Was this a longer? Was there longer drives than the first time round?
Well, no, the first time round was like the north and Scotland. This second bit was like Bristol and Cardiff and London. I'm feeling like I'm missing one.
Okay.
Oh, Milton Keynes. Milton Keynes.
How could you skip over the MK, yeah. the big MK?
The MK yes. Don.
Yeah, yeah, there we go.
The cultural hub of the UK, no offence.
Yeah.
So one of the, I think actually the first time I ever saw a show being streamed live was being streamed live from Milton Keynes.
Okay.
It was this band from Philadelphia called Everyone Everywhere, who was a band that I really liked. And I was putting them on in Brighton a few days later. This was probably 2011, I want to say.
It was early for streaming.
It was early for streaming, yes. And they streamed the entire show on Ustream.
Oh, wow.
I think it was Ustream. There was about five people at the gig. And the quality of the stream was terrible because it was on like an iPhone 3 or something.
Oh. Couldn't actually tell that there were no people there.
Yeah,
just,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. It was all pixelated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I thought it was very cool. And it was. It's actually something that I am quite surprised still hasn't really caught on.
No, well, it's just not very good yet. You still need so much gear to make a stream.
Streaming
actually,
gigs, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that's true necessarily.
And you think you can't really, it's not like you can do it with a couple of room mics and a left and right output
of
the
desk.
No,
but you could absolutely do it from the left and right output of the desk, can you?
It wouldn't sound very good.
Wouldn't it?
I don't think so. You'd have to have someone set up with a separate interface that's taking every single channel from the stage running through to the desk, and then those channels. I mean,
yeah,
that's,
just take the mix.
That's how you do if you're gonna film a gig.
But yeah, but I mean, streaming.
But I mean, even if you were gonna do it properly, I'm surprised that someone like Taylor Swift hasn't sold us. You know, with all the subscription services that are out there at the moment, like a big band could do that. They could sell subscriptions to watching live shows.
Tell you who does it very well, American mega churches. If you go and look up any bit of streaming kit, like for particularly for video stuff, but I assume this handles the audio as well, pretty much every demo out there is done by someone in, you know, like a mega church.
Right, okay.
And
right.
The reason for that is obviously, you know, they put a lot of effort into the production and stuff, and they stream it outside of the people, you know, the congregation on the day. So yeah, if you're looking for like video switches or like camera kit that for like live stream production, all the demos on YouTube are done by people who do the production for big churches.
Right, wow.
So there's probably a solution there. But yeah, I've looked into it before. Quite expensive, as you'd imagine.
I imagine it is.
On a slightly different topic, although somewhat related, Fugazi, they recorded basically every show they ever did.
Really?
Yeah. Right. Like from so they started in 1983, I think that first record came out. No, later than that, 1987. They started in 1987, and the last record, The Argument, came out in 2001. But you can go onto, I think it's on the Discord website, and basically it's got a catalogue of every show that they played. And you can filter by country, by town, by song. Like, the whole thing is catalogued, and you can buy the show. Like, they've got the shows up there for you to pay for if you want to download the actual like live recording.
That's really cool. I wish it was with a band that were, you know, are more likely to have good sounding live shows.
Oh no, that, like, they sound incredible.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
They sound incredible. Like I don't know how much you know about Fugazi, but like amazing, like genuinely incredible, like amazing post-hardcore.
Yeah,
I mean, they basically invented post-hardcore, you know.
Yeah.
And because that, you know, they were all in hardcore bands originally, but like, it goes back to 1987, their first tour that like they recorded it all, and you can download it.
That's very
it's bonkers.
Cool.
It's bonkers. But what I mean is, if there were people doing it in 1987, and I know that you, like Grateful Dead and stuff were on a lesser degree, were doing similar sort of things with all those like Grateful Dead bootlegs and stuff like that, and there were entire kind of fan cultures. But there was an entire fan culture based around people trading Grateful Dead bootlegs. And they encouraged it because it was a way for people to hear all the like mad stuff they were doing.
Right.
But I'm surprised that hasn't hit a kind of, what, you know, 21st century we haven't hit a 21st century version of that.
There is kind of something in between. Do you remember Pearl Jam did it, where they recorded for like four tours or something? They recorded every single gig, and you could, and they had it available to buy on CD by the time people were being let out of the gig.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, or maybe it wasn't like, maybe you could order it the day after or something. I'm sure you could buy it at the gig though.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
is it like one copy? Did they put a CD on?
Wu-Tang. They just had the one copy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Mark Shrelly's bought it.
I'm sure you could buy it at the gig. Maybe not. Maybe it was just shortly after. But yeah, they recorded every show basically. And I remember once going into like Virgin Megastores or something, and it just had like a selection of them. It's like, oh, here's one from Phoenix, and here's one from, I don't know, somewhere else in the States. And it was like, okay, that's weird. But have they just not sold these? And then they're like, yeah, we're punting these out to stores now, so you could just buy some random show.
I've recently got into sort of live
I thought you were going to say Pearl Jam. Really, really got into Pearl Jam.
I've been listening to a lot of Tom Waits' live recordings, actually. And I've found versions of songs that, like Four Sheets to the Wind in Copenhagen, there's a better version than the one that was actually committed.
I know you
to
went
record.
There recently, and yeah,
it is a song about alcohol abuse in Copenhagen.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's by Tom Waits.
Perfect for you. Like,
yeah. but yeah, he's done better versions of it than the one that actually got committed to.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the Bob Dylan thing, is that like his fans say that pretty much the recordings are the worst versions of any of his songs. You know, there's always better versions than the ones that are on the actual records. And that's true. And that's why, you know, again, going back to the kind of official bootlegs, that's why he put out that series, the whatever it's called, the bootleg series, which are basically him putting out bootleg recordings of himself. and he's been doing that since, I think that first CD came out in the early 90s, maybe. And now he's up to like volume 15 or 16 or something like that. And it's just like from different periods of his career, he'll do like, okay, here's all the tapes of me playing in a hotel room before I did this album and I had to send it off to the copyright people. And now you can listen to it on Spotify.
Right, wow.
It's, yeah, it's amazing.
I really struggle with live albums.
Really?
Yeah, I do really struggle with live albums. I just think generally, and it comes back to what you were talking about a minute ago with, well, how do you make it sound good? Well, I think a lot of the time you can't make it sound good.
Yeah.
How about you allegedly re-record the entire thing a la Mark Tom and Travis show?
I do think heavier, yeah, absolutely. I do think heavier
stuff.
This song
is about your girlfriend.
Heavier stuff is... applause.
Was it all fake, that record?
Well, that's kind of the allegedly...
The vocals are obviously way
and
too good.
Re-recorded at least some of it, if not most of it.
Right, I see. Wow, that really is terrible. But I've sort of lost my train of thought.
Of course.
I've completely lost my train of thought. But I think no, it's gone. I keep hoping it's going to come back as I start saying.
Of course,
you were saying it's gone.
Live record. I remembered it. I've got it. I'm back on track.
He's got it.
I was thinking that.
And another thing about Blink-182.
Oh no, wait. Oh god,
he's lost it again. Genesis.
I was thinking it would be harder for heavier music to sound good on a live recording. Like, surely it lends its stuff to people like Tom Waits and Leonard Cohen, and, you know, who have a load of like live albums, rather than like anything heavy or punky is going to require that sort of the air moving in
you
the
say
room.
That maybe, but It's Alive by the Ramones is probably one of the best albums ever recorded, and that's a live album, and it is unbelievable. We've talked about it again. I think we talked about it when Dan Grace was on, because he's like obsessed,
he loves that record
with it, and because most of it's up on YouTube, he's like, yeah, just some days I just put that on and watch that, and it's like half an hour and it's 15 songs or something. And yeah, that's amazing. That album is so good.
I've been listening to that quite a lot recently, actually. We put it on at work sometimes, and yeah, like the count-ins are so ridiculous, because they're all going 1, 2, 3, 4. Like there's no, absolutely no correlation between
you've
the count.
About that,
I think I did
before,
talk about it recently.
You?
Yeah, there's no correlation.
We were talking about it with when we saw Guitar Wolf. It was exactly the same.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was
yeah,
it.
There's no correlation between the counting and the tempo of the song.
Just going back to what you were saying about it lending itself better to kind of, you know, folkier bands or non-heavy bands. Surely the fact that so many of these heavier bands are using, you know, Kempers and are using active pickups and
should
stuff,
improve it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you would have thought so, because it's all about getting rid of those irregularities,
yeah,
you know, and allowing the sort of precision to cut through.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But on a in terms of albums, live albums that I do like, I do think that the Nirvana Unplugged in New York is. It's just that whole record is unbelievable.
Also, the other live album they put out from Muddy Banks of the Wish Car. Which is really interesting because it's recorded over like...
Over like a five-year period,
yeah,
isn't it?
Most of their career, basically, yeah.
Oh, right.
The liner notes are super interesting. In fact, a lot of the live stuff on that is taken direct from the board, like just stereo out from the board.
Blimey.
And it still sounds really good. So, yeah, that record is definitely worth checking out. Like, as a kid, I listened to those two more than I listened to the actual Nirvana records because I don't really like... I like In Utero, I think is really good.
Yeah.
I don't like how Nevermind is recorded because it's got that kind of like sickly sound.
Well, there's a
to
lot
it.
Of chorus on there, isn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah, I'm just not into that at all.
Everything's
actually,
very thick. Isn't
it? Yeah, I don't know. There's just something about it that it's like doesn't have the same impact. Whereas obviously, you know, the third album is like dry. It's the driest sounding record ever.
I really like Bleach. I mean, I've had a bit of a Nirvana resurgence recently. Really? Unplugged in New York was always my favorite record, and like now I think the whole thing is amazing, and I've watched the live set a few times, and also I think it's got the funniest joke I've ever heard.
Can
ever
you tell it on the
it.
podcast?
Well, yeah it's just like a sort of situational joke where the geezers from the Meat Puppets are like on tuning, and Kurt Cobain's just like, what are they tuning, a harp? I just think like it's just like every time I listen to it, I laugh. And it's like you say it out loud, it's not funny, but like that is exactly how I feel anytime I'm on stage with anyone. It's like, what are you doing? Like, it's only six strings. Get on with it.
Have you ever listened to the Meat Puppets?
Yeah.
They're not great.
They're fine.
But it's so weird that Nirvana kind of came out of these, you know, like as a kid, I'd be like, oh, I've got this Kurt Cobain interview, wicked. I'm going to like read it and like find out what bands he was into because I really like Nirvana. And he's like, yeah, our biggest influence, probably Flipper. So I bought Generic Flipper, which is I think the first Flipper album. One of the worst records ever made. It's so bad.
Discover a new way to record with iZotope Spire Studio. With this portable multi-track recorder, you can quickly and easily capture your songs at the highest quality via the built-in mic and dual inputs. Spire Studio automatically detects your instruments to sculpt the tone and set input levels. Wirelessly pair it with your iOS or Android device to add creative amps and effects, edit, mix, collaborate with bandmates, and export your songs. Now available at retailers like Sweetwater, Auto Music, Amazon, as well as Thomann and Andertons in Europe, Spire Studio is now on sale at 20% off for Black Friday. Learn more at iZotope.com/Spire/nerds or follow links in the description of this podcast.
I saw something come up on one of the Facebook forums I'm on recently about, like, I think it's from the Kurt Cobain biography, and it's a list of like the albums that he really loved.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, on there it's all like, there's loads of discord on there, like the Minor Threat record, Rites of Spring, which are the two bands that the fellas went on to be in Fugazi.
Right.
Like Wipers, Black Flag, all these like UK bands that just like people wouldn't have heard of at the time. I think Nirvana are a great band, and you know, I think that Smells Like Teen Spirit has kind of suffered from what a lot of these big songs have,
which is the basket case syndrome.
They've basically just become a meme.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's you lose the kind of real impact of the songs.
Yeah, definitely. Well, as you do with anything that was overplayed.
Anything at all was overplayed.
So when I was on tour, I played in London at the 229 venue.
Played there? I went there to see Creeper. They played in the big
upstairs venue. They've got a smaller...
Sorry, I was trying to make that sound like I wasn't... like cussing you out.
Right.
They played there.
I went there recently
and I thought it was okay. It kind of felt like a school hall.
Yeah, I didn't go to the upstairs
but they do
conferences and things in that big bit. So yeah, I think it's got a little bit less edge than the downstairs venue, which is a like a 200 cap. It's much more grimy and sort of sawdust on the floory sort of thing. It's, it's
much more fitting for your act.
exactly. But we were
for the barn animals that come to see them.
Yeah, exactly. But someone contacted us before and was like, you know, would you like it filmed and recorded properly? And so we were like, yeah, sure. And afterwards, you know, they
turns out that they'd just taken a left and right out of the desk. Outrageous.
He'd done it all with a thing. And afterwards he was like, right, yeah, you know, it will be this much a track sort of thing. But I wasn't able to take the second guitar amp or two of the three keyboards because he didn't have enough inputs on the desk.
Of course.
And it's like, right.
I thought he was turning up to your rock band, so not Genesis.
Yeah. We have quite a lot. I mean, bear in mind, we're touring, as I've said previously, with a whole lighting rig, three synthesizers, and, like, you know, a saxophone, well, two saxophones, because he splits between them and plays shakers when he's not playing sax.
Does he put them both in his mouth at the same time
it's not, you need two hands to play a saxophone.
Yeah, you've got two hands.
yes, but yeah, that was a shame. Anyway, when we got to Cardiff, we were playing in Wales at Fuel, which is the last year's winner of the best independent venue in Wales.
Okay.
which is wonderful venue. I do wish the urinals weren't leaking through the ceiling.
Yes,
into sort of the
fantastic.
It's a classic venue,
classic UK sort of venue. But during Body Hounds, the band we were touring with,
Ice T's band, the
bass amp cut out, and we're sharing. I was just bringing my rig, so it's head and cab. And, you know, head was still receiving signal. I could see the handy thing about Ampex. First time I've actually...
Oh, got the VU mic.
Not Ampex, Ashdowns.
Ampex don't have them.
No. Good thing about Ashdown having those VU mic is I can actually see that the head is still receiving signal.
I can see that my head is still powered and the signal's not going anywhere, so it's about to blow up.
well, it's not valve, so it's not going to hurt it, but...
Wait, what?
It's just your pre-amp.
Oh, you couldn't take your 300 watt one.
No, because I couldn't.
You were overweight.
The lighting rig was too big. It came down to a toss up between the 300 watt CTM 300 and the smoke machine.
Do we want it to look good, or do we want Joe to have his way? And clearly, everyone went with.
Yeah, I got done over. Anyway, so it was the cab. Very, very fortunately, the venue happened to have a spare 810 in a cupboard.
Which
I had to.
It's like Jay's house. Yeah. An 810 in a cupboard that never gets used.
Yeah, exactly. So, which I had to sort of drag, you know, onto the stage
halfway through Body Hound's set.
No, so they finished. So very fortunately, Joe Thorpe, their bass player, comes prepared for such a situation and has a second DI signal going out through a cab sim on his board.
Okay.
So he was still getting monitor. He'd just lost the stage sound.
Fine. Is it going through a sound amp or something?
Yeah, it's a dark glass.
Yeah, version.
But yeah, it's got a cab sim on it and everything. So that what was coming out of the PA was still okay. You lost something on stage, like it didn't sound the same if you were right in front of them.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, the sound guy had to compensate for it, and it became very difficult for Joe because I think the monitors themselves weren't especially subby, so it was difficult for him to hear himself. But he still made it through the set. But I was like, well, I don't have a cab sim. I've got like there are five of us on stage, and there's a lot of noise coming from stage. And then obviously they found the 810, which was very convenient. But that's the second time that's happened to me.
What cab did you have with you? So, you had the 215.
Yeah, so I have two 115s. Custom made 115s, and they're Ashdown Custom Shops. Now, one of them last year did exactly the same thing.
Oh, really?
And I was actually touring the other one, and this has now done that. So I think there must have been something wrong with them.
With the batch or whatever.
Yeah.
Right, okay. That's irritating.
Yeah, so I fortunately have one at home to swap it for now for the last leg. But man, how do you deal with like a speaker going out at a show?
If you need to borrow an 810, I think I can. So on that note, actually, and not meaning to jump ahead of you here, but so I had a band practice this week. So I'm playing, I'm playing bass in Random Heroes because Mark is away.
Right.
What?
Sort of.
Kind of.
Sort that doesn't make sense. Mark, you're the singer in
Random
Heroes.
Yeah, it's my thing. You know, basically, I'm handing it over to Jay.
Random Heroes got asked to do a cover set.
Is this like when you made
charity.
Me take over the podcast?
Yeah, exactly. I don't really want to do it anymore.
Yeah, Mark's like getting rid of all his responsibilities. He can spend all his time with the cats. No, so Random Heroes got asked to do a cover set for a charity show at Christmas, and they agreed to it, and then Mark couldn't do it, so I'm doing it. But I had a band practice this week, and I was like, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bring my 8x10, because when else am I going to get a chance to plug it in and give it a go? But then I realised actually what I wanted to do is have a beer, so I didn't do that because I would have had to drive.
Right.
And then I didn't have a beer, so I could have done it. But anyway, that's all by the by. I am going to take that 8x10 to the practice next time we have one, for that very reason, because it's one of those things where how often do you get to try this heavy gear that you own in any sort of sense of regularity? Like, I bet you don't use your Ashdown cabs, except for when you're on tour.
Yeah.
You don't take them to a practice room, and you certainly don't plug them in at home.
No, I take my head to a practice room, but yeah, never the cabs.
Yeah, exactly. So for that very reason, I'm gonna take it to the next practice, which is really inconvenient.
That's so
because I'm gonna have to get someone to give me a hand getting it into the car.
Are just the worst thing to transport for.
Yeah, but it sounds wicked, and I tell you what, more importantly, it looks well cool.
They do look cool. I'm not a fan of how 810s sound. I cannot make them sound good. But I think it's just the way I set up. So I think maybe if you're used to 810s or 410s, you set everything up in a certain way to have a certain amount of top end.
Basically, what I want is loads of top and loads of mid and not very much bass.
See, I want loads of bass and loads of mid, but I guess if I used a 410, what I would do is cut more of the treble because I'm so used to the way 15 sound. Whenever I switch over to 810s, I'm like, I don't know what to do to my EQ to get rid of this, but everything sounds like I'm in Korn all of a sudden. And I realise that 810s are incredibly versatile. I just struggle with
it's
them.
Just never worked.
Been able to make them sound good. In fact, speaking of struggling to make things work, there's another show that we're playing in Germany next week that got cancelled, and so they finally got the demo through. Yeah, they actually listened to us. We're actually cancelling this.
Introducing the all-new Mariposa Omar Rodriguez Lopez signature model electric guitar from Ernie Ball Music Man. The latest design from the ground-up signature model in a long list of unique and often groundbreaking artist instruments. Unlike most other brand signature releases, Music Man team up with each artist to design every single element of their instrument. From the body shape to the pickups, controls, and construction type, each new addition to the Music Man signature series is as individual as the player they work with. And the Mariposa is no exception. Featuring an offset angular Akume body shape, providing a beautiful, unique appearance whilst retaining maximum balance and playing comfort. Gorgeous custom pickguard designs, laser etched with an original ornate floral design and coordinated to complement each specific finish option. And unique and versatile dual volume pots to create a natural variation in the high end when set at different levels. Available in Imperial Black, Imperial White, Dorado Green, and of course, Pueblo Pink. Check them out in the description of this podcast or at music-man.com. This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Celestion and their incredible new Neo 250 copperback speakers. Sacrificing none of the delicious musicality of your favorite Celestions, the Neo 250 copperback is a neodymium speaker that supplies tons of tone without the signature cone breakup immediately associated with a classic Celestion growl. Rated at a monstrous 250 watts, the Neo 250 works together with your amp to provide fantastic dynamics, delivering all the headroom and touch sensitivity you could possibly need. All that at a modest £5, which is that's like 2.2 kilograms. Check them out at Lean Business in the UK, Tube Amp Doctor in Germany, Algam in France, Eco Music in Italy, Eberloud in Spain, plus gear for Music Toman and Backstrop. And if you're in the US, then you've got retailers like Sweetwater, Musician's Friend AMS, Parts Express, Loudspeakers Plus, and of course, Amazon. For more details, check them out, Celestion.com.
Anyway, someone else we know is like that actually happens to run a DIY sort of venue and an event on that night, and was like, he was going to have a local band, so he was like, I'll just move them to the following week because it's a weekly thing, and you guys can play in that slot. And it's this really cool, very very DIY sort of undergroundy venue, in Germany, and we were like, brilliant, thank goodness that this person stepped forward and contacted us when we put out, say, the show was cancelled. It's saved us money, saved us a place to stay.
Presumably it's in the middle of the tour.
Yeah, bang in the middle of the tour. Yeah. So I was like, great, this is almost knocked all of the profit out of the tour because we don't get paid for that show, and we've now got to find somewhere to stay separately. So, it was really going to hurt. So wonderful. And then they were like, it's super DIY. So there's no PA.
Oh, that's fine for you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter for you.
Would have been fine when we were a three-piece, but now we've got three keyboards and the two saxophones going through effects boards.
Haven't you got, some spare amps, though? Could you take, five amps or whatever with you?
Well, actually, it's just that I know people in Germany, so I've got a couple of mates who are guitarists who live nearby who are bringing their guitar amps, and we're going to try.
I've got PA you can borrow if you want.
In Germany?
No, here.
No, we can't fit it in. The van's full.
Just don't take one of your combo. Don't take your cab.
Yeah, no.
Just what you should do is you should fly to the venue.
Right, right.
And that way the PA speakers, or just don't go, record the bass tracks and then put them through the PA.
Yeah.
Everyone's a winner.
Way better. I mean, I would say you're roughly the size of two large PA speakers.
Anyway, okay, moving on. Let's talk about some guitar stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're for.
I want to just jump in quickly before we get into the news.
I wasn't going to talk about news yet.
Before whatever your rubbish you're going to talk about, I watched a documentary this week called As the Palaces Burn, which is a documentary about Lamb of God, the band.
Right.
It's a completely bonkers story. You might have heard about it in the news. The vocalist gets kind of caught up in this manslaughter case about someone who died either at or shortly after. I think it was shortly after a Lamb of God gig. I won't go into that because to spoil it or anything. But one of the interesting things for me watching it was I finally got some context about who Mark Morton and Willie Adler are. After years of talking about their signature models firstly in GAC and on the GAC podcast, and also probably briefly at the start of this podcast, it was good to actually see, oh, that's what Mark Morton looks like. Okay, that's who Willie Adler is. I knew, but apart from what I'd seen in the news about the trial, I basically knew nothing about Lamb of God.
I don't know anything about either of their signature models. Yeah. I know all about the court case, but nothing about their signature models.
I forget who they were with. I think it was Jackson, Mark Morton. Willie Adler, I can't remember. He's the bass player.
Willie Adler is a guitar player.
Oh, sorry, he's the guitar player.
It looks like
he's the other guitar
ESP?
Player. Yes, it was, in fact, an ESP. Yeah, the WA Warbird. We used to sell them at GAC, and we talked about them a bunch on the podcast there. It was just good to get some context because I knew literally nothing about the band.
I don't remember ever talking about either of those guitars.
Yeah, yeah. The Mark Morton was a really big deal at the time. I think it was Jackson, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a Jackson. Yeah,
It was a really big deal.
What sort of thing is it?
It's kind of like almost like a Firebird, less defined and more...
Well, like chubbier,
not really chubbier, just like the features on it are less pronounced, so like the horn doesn't stick out quite as far, and it's kind of less offset, would you say? Okay. Jay, you've
like a Warwick Idolmaker.
It does kind of, when I look at it, I think it looks
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
It looks almost like a like what you would expect a Framus to look like.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they look really cool.
It looks way more like a Warwick or Framus Idolmaker.
As far as metal guitars go, it's pretty understated.
I remember that guitar. It's fantastic. Yeah. What a lovely shit. It's somewhere between a Firebird and a Telecaster.
What was it called? The Dominion?
The Dominion. Yeah, very cool. I don't know if it's still a current model.
It's a great guitar for Jackson. It looks like a sort of Charvelli shape.
I mean, Charvel Jackson are essentially the same company, so.
The Willie Adler is kind of like a Les Paul.
I think it's a current model. It looks really cool. I've never seen one in the flesh. The
available white one, in vintage white and black.
The white one
lovely.
Looks really good.
Is it gold hardware?
White, we've got. Yeah, they're both gold hardware, lovely. White and black, vintage
Block
white.
Inlays.
And, yeah. They look really good. I mean, it's not a huge amount of money. $899 Yeah,
oh, that's pretty decent.
Looks really good. Three aside headstock.
I was about to ask, what's the headstock on a Jackson when they're not doing a pointy thing?
Yeah, it's like a three aside headstock. It's a bit weird.
Does it have any weird?
It's kind of like Stumpy the headstock.
Yeah, Stumpy the headstock.
Yeah, just kind of like doesn't go to much of a point, but it also is like it's like if the kind of Gibson kind of open book was sort of the other way round, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like
a closed book.
instead of going into the headstock, it sort of goes the same shape but out of the headstock.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, check out the documentary. The story's super interesting.
Yeah, I've been meaning to watch that.
Unsurprisingly, as with all kind of like metal dudes that are kind of scary on stage and, you know, the music's a bit terrifying, they all seem like really nice blokes.
Yeah,
and they're just like really quiet and really into playing guitar and that. So, it's definitely worth checking out. And it was good to get some context on those guitars that we talked about a few years ago.
So speaking of artists who have signature models.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Yeah, so really I was spending some time on the Thomann Guitar Lab earlier today.
Okay.
I don't know if any of you guys have checked this out or listener. I think you should absolutely check this out. You can go onto the Thomann website and find the Guitar Lab. Boys, you should do this with me whilst you're listening. If you just go to guitar and basses on the Thomann website, you'll find the Guitar Lab. And its whole thing is like, find your dream guitar. And essentially what it does is it allows you to pick criteria that are important to you, and then it will give you a search result based on that. So you can select, you can list it according to an artist. So you can have it like that. You can list it according to a band, or you can list according to a body shape. Now, once you've made your first selection, which is interesting, I, for example, right now, selecting an SG body shape and just seeing what it throws up. It then gives you the sort of basic model. It says, well, the shape that you've picked is a Gibson SG. It then gives you this lovely display called weighting, where it will give you four strings and a plectrum across each string. And you can move that plectrum up and down, which defines which feature is more important to you.
It's most important. Yeah.
Which can be the color, the body shape,
A spanner.
Yeah, a spanner, which
pickups,
is priorities.
So this is
and the
features.
Price.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the price as well. You can then define by color. It's got a complete RGB color palette, and you can literally click anywhere and it will redefine the list that it's displaying below to show only guitars in that color. And you can then also include and exclude manufacturers, and it even has a little dice on there where you can roll a dice and it will find something for you that it thinks like it lines up in this. So for example, I've chosen pink, the SG. I've said that my number one thing is the color, which is pink, and my number two thing is price, and it's thrown me up the Gibson SG standard high performance in
Oh, that pink drip or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to come up with the Charvel DK24.
Ah, right.
Because there's an HH version.
Ah, I see. It might have done
I did roll the dice and it came up with a Black Les Paul standard.
I'm going to roll the dice now.
I'm rolling the dice now. Try your luck. Oh, I got a Black Gretsch G5 220, which is the sort of Les Paul.
Oh my God, this has actually come up with my dream guitar, a Yamaha Pacifica 112V.
But I thought it was really interesting.
That is really cool. That is really cool. I don't know of anything else like this.
No, it's done in a really interesting way. And I thought, what a great way to kind of, if you're not sure what you're looking for next. I mean, it's definitely a sort of search criteria for people who own a load of guitars and don't know what they need next, but know that they need to fill that void somehow. And this is a wonderfully interesting way to do it. So, so thoroughly worth checking out. But actually, me utilizing this guitar lab, it led to me discovering the new Sire Marcus Miller V7 in Burgundy Mist.
So Sire, I think, is Marcus Miller's company,
yeah, is it? So Sire exists as a company pre-Marcus Miller, and essentially what Sire did was they approached Marcus Miller and they said, we want to release a range of guitars and we'd like to have your name on the headstock instead of ours.
Yeah, okay.
Because there was
the Marcus Miller Fender Japan?
There was a Japanese version and then a Mexican version towards the end.
Okay.
Yeah,
an American version.
That's right, you're very right, but only a 5-string.
Yeah, weirdly at one point, the 4-string was made in Japan, and the 5-string was made in America.
Yeah, and there was a
good... And what, the 6-string was Mexican?
Yeah.
And there was a solid £1,000 difference in price between the sort of 4 and the 5. It was a lot of extra money for that string.
You know?
But they were really good.
That's how much a 5th string costs.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. One thing I really liked about those old Marcus Millers was they had that massive oversized scratch plate where it extended into the lower half of the body, where you actually got a separated bit of scratch plate, even though it looked like it was all part of one, which contained the preamp, which meant you could easily purchase and change the battery. The battery was on the back. But you could change a preamp almost as easily as you could have.
Change the preamp?
Yeah.
For what?
For a different preamp.
A different preamp.
But like, who sells those?
Loads.
Yeah.
Mate, you know nothing about the world of bass.
Well, clearly not. No.
Aguilar have one of the most popular sort of preamps. A lot of people there.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, Jay. Your bass playing and you as a person are not going to intersect with interchangeable preamps ever in life. So
okay, good.
Don't worry about it.
Okay,
fine. They were good, those old Fender ones. I thought they were really nice. Maple necks, pearl block inlays, vintage tin, came in good colours. You know, they were wicked basses. So, you know, I was disappointed that they were discontinued and he made this move, obviously, over to Sire. But for all intents and purposes, the Sire stuff does seem to be very high quality and very competitively priced. And I think Marcus Miller strikes me as the sort of fellow who wouldn't shove his name on any old junk. He seems very excited about these instruments.
By all reports, they're very good.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently the quality is very high.
Yeah, they've been very successful and they kind of seem to be continuing to expand this range of Marcus Miller basses. And this is the second generation we're now on. They've released a lovely sort of turquoisey blue version with a matching headstock and a choice of either maple with I think it's maple with cream block or rosewood with perloy block inlays. But they've also released, obviously, this Burgundy Mist number. So I can now get a matching headstock Burgundy Mix. Burgundy Mist.
Burgundy Mix.
Burgundy Mix.
I prefer Bombay Mix.
But I'm very excited about this guitar. €477 for a lovely looking Burgundy Mist
You just can't not have the Burgundy Mist, can you?
I need the Burgundy Mist in my life, yeah.
Have you got anything at the moment that's Burgundy Mist?
No. I don't think I've ever owned anything Burgundy Mist. It's just not a very accessible colour.
I tell you what, I've just zoomed in on one of the bigger pictures of it and it looks... the flake on there is fantastic.
Yeah.
It looks really good.
Yeah, the downside, I guess, of this guitar is that you've got... you've got an awful lot of controls going on.
Yeah.
Because it's active. So on here, you've got 5 controls and one of them is a 3-tiered concentric.
Oh, wow.
What?
Yeah, one of them's a triple-tiered concentric.
No, that's too much. The world's gone mad.
So the only guy, so I know a fella who has one of these. He got the PJ, but it also has a triple tiered concentric. But the placement of the triple tiered concentric is, so, or maybe it's a jazz bass he owns, actually thinking about it. The placement of it means that he keeps hitting his hand on it when he's, because he's plectrum style.
Wait, I can't see that in the picture.
It's very, very tall, Mark.
Yeah, but that's not three controls. There's still only two.
Is it just a very, very tall double tier? Either way, that is...
Yeah, I don't understand why it sticks out so much, but there's definitely only two controls. Well,
maybe
there.
I always assumed it was a triple as it's quite as high as it is.
The triple would be ridiculous, Joe.
Yeah, but this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. Maybe you're right on closer inspection. Maybe it's two, but it is...
Okay, so here it is.
Oh, that is a long second tier.
Controls. Volume / tone, dual pot. Pickup blender, treble, middle / middle frequency, dual pot, and bass. So it's two dual concentrics on there.
Right, wow.
It's a lot.
That's a lot of controls.
Yeah, and it's dual concentric, single, dual concentric, single.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
That's why the knobs have got to be big.
Yeah, so I don't know what I'm going to do with that.
Clip that.
I guess I'd have to take all the knobs off when if I got one, or like just to have less knobs.
You want to take the preamp out?
Mm. Yeah, maybe. Well, you can run it passively anyway.
Both the pickups, and then just hang it up on the wall.
Yeah. Absolutely. Anyway, we should.
We're about up to time, aren't we?
Yeah, we can't be that far off.
Do you want to do mailbag or news?
Let's do mailbag on here. Let's do news. No, let's do news and then see how far we get in the news. Let's do a bit of mailbag on the Patronus.
Okay.
Do you want to do it that way around?
Not really.
Okay, all right. Well, let's do mailbag on here then.
I'm going to do the mailbag.
You get so excited about stuff that rocks up at your house, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Well, yes. Yeah, I do. Well, I'll tell you what. Look, I'm confused now.
Let's do mailbag, and we'll do news.
We're going to do the mailbag.
Patreon.
So this week we
haven't left enough time for the jingle.
Oh yeah, okay. Sorry. Here's the jingle.
Mailbag.
There we go. That was nice, wasn't it?
I don't know. Lovely, I didn't hear it.
Lovely.
I just had to look at you with your arm in the air as if there was actually something happening.
Anyway, so this week we received a lovely Spire Studio. From Isotope.
Okay, no one knows what that is.
Okay, so the Spire Studio is like an interface. It's a recording solution for mainly for guitarists, I suppose. But it's an all-in-one solution that works with a phone or a tablet. Basically, runs alongside an app, and it comes. It's a lovely sort of domey shaped. I don't know how to describe it. It's very simple.
I would say it's about the size of a large novelty coffee mug.
Yes, that's about what it is. But it's it comes fitted with a couple of really high quality mic.
Mark just dropped his mic on the floor.
Talk about high quality microphones. I'm glad this one still works
I'm pretty glad.
I'm not really sure how that happened.
No, congratulations. Okay. Well done. I need to not give you that mic stand again. Yeah. Anyway, so the Spire Studio is this really cool interface. So it has some really obvious big controls. And I think kind of the gist is with the Spire Studio is that it's aiming at people who don't necessarily use a DAW or have like a home recording setup. Jay, I mean, who use something like Logic or
a digital
Cubase.
Audio workstation.
it's aimed at people who don't necessarily use that or have a home setup, or maybe they want to have something that they can record with on the fly, and it's very, very useful for that. So you've got two inputs, as you would sort of, you know, just a standard interface to use with a DAW, but it also has a really good high quality microphone to capture sound, and then you've got a great big sort of like volume meter and a big play record button and some basic controls on the front panel that allow you to control things from there rather than say your phone or your iPad. And I think they're especially useful when you're using your phone because obviously the buttons and the controls are going to be quite small on there. The cool thing about this is if I was to set this up in a room, put it on the coffee table a couple of feet away from me, pick up an acoustic, I can press the sound check button and I can play and sing a small part of a song, and the Spire will recognize that it is receiving both a vocal and a guitar feed, and it will it will correct its compression input and everything, so nothing's going to clip. It recognizes those things without you having to do anything, which is great. And this is what the Spire Studio is really good at. It's working out, hey, what do people who don't record not know about how to record? And it's managed to create automatic ways to deal with that. But because it's iZotope software, to a really high quality standard. And then the thing is, after you've recorded things and you then get access through the app to all these built-in effects, they've included things like amps and pedals if you're plugging a guitar, an electric guitar, into the back, which is fantastic. So you literally don't need to, there's no plugins required, and you don't need to bring anything else along other than your guitar.
Where is it? Where's it storing the audio? Storing the audio on your phone recording into the phone.
Right. That's correct. Okay. Yes, but you can also sort of sync it with your SoundCloud or whatever and have it there. I can't remember if it has its own like proprietary storage system or not. I was just using my phone. I just set it up as whatever the basic one was to test it out.
Yeah. So, but you can use it as just a regular interface for like any door, can't you?
No, because you're running it with the app.
You need the software. Yeah, that's right.
No, you're running it just with the app. But that's what this is for. It's like the perfect demo tool.
Yeah.
But I think it's so much more than that because it's so high quality. So I tested this out doing some vocals and some acoustic guitar at home. And the great thing is, after you've recorded in your sort of live take, which sounds good enough as it is, you have access to the effects. And as I said, you had the amps and pedals, but it's not just that. I can go into the settings for space where I can add some natural reverb, and I can say that I want I want my vocals to sound like they're in a large hall or something. If I wanted, I could pop some slapback delay on.
And can it do it on just the vocals or just the guitar, or will it do it on the whole thing?
Well, if you record them separately, can do it on the whole thing. But no, yes, if you're recording guitar and singing at the same time, it will recognize that as one track, but it will still treat the track appropriately, so whilst you won't have separate tracks, it would have been it would have been treated to the overall sound of receiving those two things. So it would become difficult for you to say add a flanger to the acoustic guitar.
That's fine.
I don't mind
how difficult it is.
No one ever would need to do that.
But yeah, I just thought it was. I thought it was a fantastic piece of kit.
I'm gonna be honest with you. Yeah. When you talked about this earlier,
yeah,
I was like, I don't care about this at all. I don't care at all. This sounds boring. It also sounds a bit confusing, which is, I appreciate my own inadequacies as a bit of a technophobe, but you pushed through the fact that me and Mark were clearly disinterested in this when you first arrived, and actually
I was interested in it, but just not listen to Joe talk about it.
Actually think it's very cool.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to leave it with me so that I can play around with it.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to talk about it next week.
Just to explain, it basically is the size of like an Amazon Echo or something like that.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
It's very small and quite convenient. It looks cool. It looks really cool, and I think that would be useful for someone like me who is like, a bit of an idiot.
You can work an app, but you couldn't work Logic, for example.
No, I had a Scarlett 2i2 or whatever they're called for a while, and I couldn't even get it to my computer to recognize it.
I mean, that's probably the problem with your computer.
Maybe you're right, but I want something that I don't want to have to use a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to do it all on my iPad.
That's kind of what this does, and I know there are obviously things like GarageBand, but GarageBand is very low quality, sort of simple.
Okay, so
this is an extremely high quality, easy to use.
Here's another question for you: Could I then take that and put drums on it somehow? Is there any software that can I make a demo, like a proper band demo drums?
This is an organic tool.
Yeah, okay. But then with when you take the track and put it into...
Oh, right, yes, you could certainly get the stems off of this. And the cool thing is that you can define tempos of your tracks and things. Even via the Spire, you can define those tempos. So you can do that.
You could effectively, let's say, for example, you are someone who travels a lot, whatever, you want to record demos, mm-hmm. But you don't want to take a full interface with you and you don't want to take a laptop and stuff. You could just take that, set the tempo on, I assume there's some sort of metronome built into the app,
there is, yeah.
And you could record it you know, for me it'd be like 220 BPM, but for normal people maybe 120.
Yeah.
And then you take the stems off, and then you could add tracks to them later, and then you got a full track.
Absolutely. And the thing is, because this is because the mic capture in there is so good, is such a good quality, it would be good enough for you to do this. I think it's really easy for you to be creative. So one thing I did was I played some guitar in, sung a bit badly. I did a Tom Waits impression, and then I with the next track, I just I like set it up and just hit the coffee table that I was sitting at, and then added like a load of reverb to it. So I hit that as the kick drum in time with the track I'd recorded, added some reverb to that, and then ran back through the track. On another track, hitting a biro against a wine glass, and I added like slap back delay.
The things
to that.
That you've got knocking around at 8 o'clock in the morning.
But and there was too much wine in there. It didn't. Yeah, so I had to drink some of that.
I had to get rid of it.
And then you know,
but I used that as the snare, and then was able to create sort of my own drum track. Is that? But the thing is, adding things like that slapback delay and adding the sort of really open reverb on the kick made it actually sound good. Like it actually sounded convincing and high quality. And then you can mix. You can even mix via the app. It gives you like a 3D, not 3D, sort of a like a big square where you can see all the instruments you've recorded, and you can move them anywhere within that square. So so as applying to how they're panned and also how high they are in the mix, I thought was really fantastic. Great for making weird drum tracks that are like split across.
I think definitely we should get a longer review next week after Jay and maybe me have had a play around in it. But why don't you record this week's Patreon song on it and see how we go?
Yeah, okay, fine. That's a good idea. I will do that. Anyway, we've not got very long left. Should we do a small amount of news?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I want to talk about. Do the jingle. There we go. Okay, so the first thing that I want to talk about is...
I don't understand why you hold your hand up.
What? Yeah, every time I have a jingle, I sort of hold my hand in there.
It's not as if to be like, hang on, guys, please hold up a minute.
It's like I'm imagining that I'm listening to it.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
So one of the first big gigs that I ever went to as a teenager was Reading 2000.
Oh, I was there.
Yeah, Reading 2000.
Slipknot and Blink-182 headlined.
Yes, indeed. It was definitely that.
I tried and quite a few things for the first time there.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Really? I was 12. I would have been 13.
Right.
And I can't remember the name of the opening band, but one thing that I do remember very distinctly is that they were playing in fact, I think they had two guitar players who had Godan Radiator guitars.
Right, okay.
And Godan have just announced a reissue of the Radiator. Now, for those who don't know, the Radiator is a kind of,
your house.
In the guitar sense. It's like a kind of flat top Les Paul.
It's a bit Gretschy, isn't it? It's more like a Gretsch 225.
And actually, the original shape was even kind of more offset than this. It had a kind of almost like weird sort of Jaguar vibe to it. It was a very unique shape. But the thing that's very distinctive about them is instead of having a a maple cap or what those stupid woods that you like Coca Bolo or whatever cap on there.
Jatoba.
Indeed.
Ba-binga.
What they actually do is basically almost the entirety of the front of the guitar is covered with a scratch plate. And the original ones were all perloid. They're on these new models, I believe two of the options, matte black and bourbon burst, I believe, come with a perloid top. But there is also the trans cream, which comes with a tortoiseshell.
Oh my goodness, that sounds awesome.
And this time
around... Tell me it's got a matching head cap.
This time round, they have not only settled for the face of the guitar, they've also done the headstock, which, yes, again, has a matching cap on it. So, yeah, on the black and the bourbon burst, you've got the perloid, and on the trans cream, you've got the tortoiseshell.
Why bother doing a burst?
Well, indeed, yeah. I mean, there's basically none of the guitar is the burst. But yeah, I mean, there's not a huge amount to say, really. If you were familiar with the original ones, yes, they've tweaked the shape slightly. They're still, I think the originals were mini humbuckers, right. And the new ones are full-size humbuckers. There'll be Godin's own pickups, wraparound, compensated bridge on there, three-way selector switch. You've got four controls. I assume it's volume, volume, tone, tone. But the good thing, and was very surprising to me, USD map price $699.
Blimey!
Which
I mean, those bridges are a nightmare. But
no, they're compensated though. It's got as far as I can see from this picture, it looks like it's got saddles
right,
on there.
Fine.
Whether you can move them or
not. Whenever you do that all in one, it just makes the bridge really tall.
Well, let me have a look for you. Oh, in fact, this is very odd. One of the models, which I assume is the Burst, actually doesn't have a purloined scratch plate. I was confused about that. It's got just a black scratch plate that goes across the whole top. No, in fact, it's me getting it
In fact,
wrong.
This guitar is not Godin. It's,
it is, no,
it's
sorry.
Actually a Strat made by Sir.
Okay, so the Burst model has the white purloined guard. The right. matte black has a black scratch plate. And then the Trans Cream has got the tortoiseshell scratch plate on it. They look fantastic. I'm very, very much into it. And I think it's going to be too late for Gear of the Year now.
Really?
But looks alone, I would highly, highly... I would think this one would finish high up in my rankings. I'm into it. Good to see a classic brought back.
Yeah. So whilst you've been talking, I've been trying to find who it was that was playing the Godin Radiator. And
I think it was either Kay or My Vitriol.
Okay, well, I just looked. I couldn't see either of those because actually the opening band that day was Daphne and Celeste.
No, they weren't the opening band.
No, they weren't opening.
It says here... Oh, is that the year they play in between Rage Against the Machine and Slipknot? And there was like that's when they got bottled off or something like that.
Yeah.
I think it was My Vitriol.
Okay. I did look up My Vitriol.
The
only
only pictures I can find of My Vitriol, the geezer was playing a Line 6 Variax 700.
Wow. Okay.
Is that the carved top one?
Sure.
No, isn't that the one of the JCVs?
No, there was a
car top version of the 700.
Yeah, the
700 was the car top version.
Yeah, this sort of looked a bit like PRS.
Because there was what, the 3, the 5,
and the 700.
And the 7, yeah.
Yeah, he's playing a Variax 700.
Super Suckers played on the main stage.
And in fact, I met Eddie Spaghetti when I was on the way back to the train. I only went for the one day. I went for that day that Blink played.
Oh, you only went for one day?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, yeah. I was like, I'm not hanging around for the rest of it. I met Eddie Spaghetti, who is the bass player from the Super Suckers. Great band. He was pretty out of it outside a pub near the train station. So, quality.
Basically,
I saw bands at that festival.
Apart from the bands that are on the main stage there, I don't know. I mean, Ian Brown, but other than that, there's nobody else there. And Elliot Smith. There's nobody else there that I recognise. Shaq, Utah Saints.
Yeah, Utah Saints, yeah.
Lupine Howe, Clint Boone Experience.
He's from another band.
The Animal House, The Crockett's.
Oh, I love The Crockett's. I went to see them.
Linoleum.
They later became The Crimea, but I preferred them as The Crockett's.
Okay.
We should get the fella from My Vitriol on this podcast because I think they're still going. And also, he has got the weirdest selection of guitars. So I'm almost certain that it was him playing the Godin Radiator. But just doing a quick Google image search. Firstly, he's playing a Line 6 Variax 600, but also I've found a picture of him with a 500, the cheaper one. Plus also a Yamaha Mike Stern, which is the Yamaha Pacifica Telecaster.
Oh, yeah.
he seems to have a 70s SG. All sorts. There's like tellies. Yeah, very, very odd. I can't find a picture of him with the guitar that I actually remember him playing.
Hmm. Very weird. Well, anyway, that actually brings...
Black Eyed Peas played the dance stage.
Yeah, I think that was pre-Fergie.
I was going to say.
Wow,
vintage.
That actually brings us up to time here on the regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We're going to be continuing over on Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month... $1 a month...
DJ Punk Rock.
Cool.
Do you think that was just some DJ...
With a creative zen or something, probably. Okay. Actually, not even then in 2000.
Anyway, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early... And it gets you access to wonderful things like Guitar Nerds Live. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode and a load more stuff. And $10 a month makes you an executive producer and gets your name sung in a lovely song at the end of every episode. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Guitar Nerds. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum. And subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Guitar Nerds. That's it for this week. We'll be continuing over on the Patreon. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye-bye.
Richard Sudworth, Brian Insler, John Half, Gavin Vandal, Linden, Jacob McGee, Christopher Franklin, Mark Hizal, Katawaki, Rob Basto, Stephen Burke, Robin Butterworth, Neil Milton, Maren Peters, Stuart Robson, Jeffrey Wax, Christian Lund Hansen, Zach Milton, Keith Adams, Steve Ferguson, Eric File, Andy Joyce, John Anglin, and Adam Royce Chris, Jake Cutmore, and Rob Google, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Amadon, Ernie Cooper, and Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Hench, Rob Graham, Matt Robinson, Dave Lee, Emma James Baker, Juan Collier, Aaron Sherman, Blake Wyland, Andrew Good, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loseth, Hans Ams, Robin Smith, Eric Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordvik, Ed Bentley, Steve Merkel, Carlos Mancha, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Tom, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Cargan, Will Clare, Boo Gravett, Phil Thompson, Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Scott Gain, Sean Arbo, and Christopher Wolfman Cuthbertson. All of the Guitar Nerds executive backers. Thank you.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.